couple other areas I want to get into before we go is the whole project at Winston-Salem, the Slavery, Race, and Memory Project. First of all, tell us about that project, and then I want to get into the whole issue around Wake Forest University and President Nathan Hatch apologizing for the university benefiting from slavery. But let's get into that project and how it came about.
I'll take the first half, and Jonathan, you'll begin with President Hatch's apology. Well, back when I was at Winston-Salem State, I was invited by Rogan Kirsch to come over and give a talk on slavery in Winston-Salem and to begin to think about how we understand Winston-Salem and our two universities. At that time, of course, Chancellor, I was at Winston-Salem State and figuring out what does it mean to occupy this space in light of the history of slavery and its legacies. What Rogan and folks at Wake did was create a project, the Slavery, Race, and Memory Project, which extended that work. The university joined University Studying Slavery, which is a project that grew out of the historic Brown University Slavery Project, where Brown looked into its historical roots and then issued its report under the leadership of Ruth Simmons. Ruth really organized how we begin to think of the responsibilities of universities relative to the institution of slavery, the imbrication of the institution of slavery with institutions of higher education. There have been numerous studies around slavery and slavery in universities, slavery in the Ivy Leagues, slavery in the South, slavery in and around. We have it at the University of Virginia. And the Slavery, Race, and Memory Project spearheaded Wake Forest's effort to begin to reckon with its own history. And not only reckon, confront that history, but really dig deep to how that history is challenging the university to live out its motto of pro humanitate. If we're living out this vision of for humanity, then we have to confront those moments in our past where we were not for all of humanity. And the vision of our humanity was circumscribed. So how do we tell that story? How do we begin to narrate the institution history from the old Wake campus that was born out of a slave plantation, even to the new Wake campus with the vestiges of segregation, the vestiges of Jim Crow, and the vestiges of even eugenics? How do we begin to think about that and live into a vision that welcomes all of the varieties of being human in the world? So with Cami Chavis, and Tim Priet. Tim is the dean of the Z. Smith Reynolds Library, and Cami is associate provost and professor of law. They provided expert leadership to begin to guide the community, to begin to confront these issues. And this past year, what we did was we inaugurated a lecture series and brought in individuals to begin to talk to the community about what this means, not only for the history of the institution, but how we go about educating future generations of students. And most importantly, how do we begin to disseminate these findings to a broader public so that we can begin to re-narrate the history of the university and the broader community? And that's where we issued a set of essays that opened up with President Hatch's really groundbreaking apology on Founders Day and ended with Jonathan Walton's charge, Lest We Forget. And it's that essay collection that really encapsulates the message that this isn't a one-off project. This isn't something that we check off and say we're complete. This is a project that gives life to the transformation of an institution to meet its solemn obligations in terms of educating individuals to go out and serve humanity.
Well, I mean, I think that's great, a great perspective. Thank you for that. Jonathan, what I want to ask you is that you're now coming to Wake Forest. You're the new dean coming in. And then on Founders Day, Nathan Hatch issues this apology. You follow that up with a keynote address. And I have as a quote from your address that said that we must acknowledge that our history at Wake Forest is both beautiful and terrible, noble and tragic, honorable and despicable. We owe our very existence in part to the exploited lives and enslaved labor of people of African descent. And these are your words and part of your address. Before you talk about that, I'm curious, as you are preparing your remarks and thinking about coming to Wake Forest as dean, what are you thinking and what space are you in as you're writing this?
I'm thinking that part of who I am was born on the tobacco fields of Eastern North Carolina and the fields of Georgia as the descendant of enslaved people, as well as from former sharecroppers who then went on to buy the land in Eastern North Carolina, of which my family still lives on. And here I am thinking about that legacy in the tobacco fields, thinking about my great-grandfather, Cephas Washington, a picture that when you walk into the house, he's standing there with tobacco up on each side. And here it is, I am now a dean of the Divinity School and Wake Chapel, on this property, this land bought by the Reynolds family, the tobacco, right? Of which I know my people in the state of North Carolina, life and labor was sacrificed to make all of this wealth possible. And so that's what was going through my mind. And while that was going through my mind and it was holding accountable the land that we stand on now. And so people talk about things such as, well, Wake Forest needs to make a definitive statement, an anti-white supremacist statement. Well, we can't make an anti-white supremacist statement until we actually own that white supremacy is actually built and baked in to all of the structure from which all of us, myself included, Corey Walker included, benefit from today. And that is one of the reasons I really did. I celebrated Nathan Hatch's apology, a thorough apology. And it's also why I celebrate efforts of the Presidential Commission on Race and Equity to make sure that there is recompense and there's rectifying measures as it relates to the benefit, this long, sordid, twisted, serpentine system of slavery that we continue to benefit from today. And so that's what I was trying to get across with those words. And I understand, James Baldwin has an incredible line at the beginning of Fire Next Time where he talks about, he says, I made a deal at the foot of the cross one day that Jesus would hide my sins from me. But Jesus didn't keep his end of the bargain. I guess he was a better friend than I took him for. Right? Because there's this element in American culture, in American society, and even American Christianity, that God will cast our sins into the sea of forgetfulness. We're forward thinking. We're telos. We're a productive society. We move forward. We let the past be the past. We move on, get over it. But that's not faith. That's folly, right? And unless we are going to continue to be the USA, the United States of amnesia, we're going to continue to be at this place of immaturity until we're able to own and never make peace with, but constantly wrestle with the lasting vestiges, because history has created the scene, the setting, the stage of which all of us are just character actors right now. And so therefore we got to own and make and wrestle with, not make peace with, but wrestle with the conditions that made all of our existence possible. And that is the benefits that we are accruing, including those of us on this call, as well as the hell that we're catching, which disproportionately looks like people like you and me, all of our cousins, sisters, aunts, uncles.
I'm curious as to how you were received after you delivered that address, and what was the response either on campus, both internally or externally, to that keynote address?
I don't know. I have an email address, a public email address that I don't check intentionally. So all hate mail is filtered away from me. But I will say as it relates to people of goodwill, colleagues of all colors, administrators of all colors, which are disproportionately white, I do believe that there's a level of sincerity there, that we are all trying to get through this. And that also actually has to do with even our relationship, Chancellor Robinson, right? Even our relationship, I'm talking about not just our personal relationship, but I'm talking about the relationship between Winston-Salem State and Wake Forest University.
Sure.
Because until we wrestle with the legacies and the histories that made our existence possible, we didn't just become a PWI because, like Betsy DeVos wants to think, right? Historically, Black colleges did that by choice, and predominantly white institutions did it by choice.
Right.
No, we're products of the vestiges and the legacy, the serpentine system of segregation in this country, right? Jim Crowism. Okay? Now, I'm a graduate of Morehouse College. I know Corey Walker is a graduate of HBCU. We are so proud of the legacy of HBCUs. And even before folks were declaring Black Lives Matter, HBCUs like Winston-Salem State were declaring Black Minds Matter.
Mm-hmm. Black of the berries, sweet of the juice.
Right? We're proud of that. But we can't have, but for all that we contribute to this community collectively, like I talked about taking my children to the traditionally segregated Black golf course, Winston Lake, right? We can't ignore the conditions that made a Winston Lake in the first place.
Right.
And so we're not going to talk about and really live into our rich contributions at Winston-Salem State and Wake Forest until we wrestle with and reckon with this past that made our existence possible.
Yeah, I love that. And that leads me to Corey. When I was talking about Jonathan and his response on Founders Day, a couple, 3 years ago at Winston-Salem State University, you were the speaker on Founders Day at WSSU. Mm-hmm. And in your remarks, you talked about HBCUs and particularly Winston-Salem State being freedom schools. And it's something that has stayed with me, and I use it a lot. Tell our audience, tell our listeners, what do you mean when you say HBCUs and schools like Winston-Salem State are freedom schools?
Man, you ain't even got to explain that. I just like that. Just you can leave that as is. I just love that.
Jess, I still remember that. That was the 125th anniversary of WSSU. And the charge came out of W.E.B. Du Bois. Whither, where, and how? This is 1960 statement that he delivered on the campus of Johnson C. Smith College, right down there in North Carolina. And Du Bois said, we have a choice in this moment. We can either go and adopt the same values of the dominant society, or we can embody the values that have gotten us this far and that will give us a new expression of freedom. That's what grounded Slater Industrial Academy. That's what grounded Simon Green Atkins coming out of Livingstone. Wow. Du Bois called Livingstone the Harvard of the South. When he came up to really build Slater Academy, he was building a vision of freedom for African Americans and for all Americans. If you begin to understand that vision of freedom as a fresh expression of human possibility and of human promise. That's what Winston-Salem State represents. So when Rogan and I taught that class my last semester at WSSU, we co-taught the class Universities and Communities. And we brought together Wake Forest students and Winston-Salem students down in downtown downtown Winston-Salem. We confronted the history that separated. You know, it's marked now by 52, but there's a deep epistemic history, meaning there's a deep there's a history of the separation of knowledge, that the knowledge on one campus is better than the knowledge on the other campus. And that maps onto the ways in which we think about the world. It's the old colloquial phrase, you know, you can hear it sometimes. I'm thinking about my late father-in-law's auto shop. It says, you know, when you think of white people, they ice is colder.
I remember that one. I couldn't understand that one, but I do remember people saying that.
Yeah. Ice is colder.
Yeah.
Sugar is sweeter.
Yeah.
It's like, milk is whiter.
Imagine if you just flipped the entire moment that the Freedom School, Winston-Salem State, was charting a path of a new style of education to prepare a new type of citizenry for a new society to inhabit a new world. That is freedom. And that's a freedom school. So every time when we did Black Genius at Winston-Salem State, it was unleashing that vision of freedom. It was unleashing the power of imagination to begin to re-envision what the prospects and possibilities are for human being and belonging in the world. That's what HBCUs give us. And we should never, ever give up on being freedom schools. Don't deny the unique and the infinite particularity of Black colleges and what they represent. They represent a new path to freedom. So it's not that HBCUs must follow other universities. It is that we must all join hands in this moment and walk into our new freedom together and experience that freedom of an authentic community. So yeah, as a product of Norfolk State University, Virginia Union University, Winston-Salem State University, and Virginia Union, having served both of these institutions, and having served at Brown, UVA, and Wake Forest, yes, I see it. I see the possibilities of a new experience of freedom from all of these institutions being intentional on transformation, not only of education, but as transformation of society by creating new freedom fighters in the long struggle for a new humanity.
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons, and a selfish reasons, why I wanted you guys on Future Focus, not only to have this conversation, but to understand this community in which we live and the work that we have to do in terms of elevating this in this community, and how collectively, if we can somehow figure this out, if we can somehow figure out, you mentioned the whole notion of unleashing genius. In fact, I was talking to my executive team this morning about our new strategic plan. And I said, that plan is going to be around unleashing the genius that we have in our communities for the students that we serve. Let's talk a little bit about in the last segment, and you guys have been so gracious with your time, is how can we collectively come together to do more? We have common spaces. You talked about the sit-ins, you know, 1960. You know, here in Winston-Salem with students from WSSU and Wake Forest University. We've been in these spaces for a long time. We celebrate a huge anniversary in terms of ML King Jr. Day. It's a collective effort that we put together. We come together during that time. Jonathan just got here in 2019, and he knows that last year in this community was the first time that the marching band from Winston-Salem State University had been invited to come over to Wake Forest to participate, you know, in an event collectively with both bands coming together. And that was magical. And Jonathan, it was,
It was magical. They had Wake Forest Band playing Earth, Wind, and Fire. Chancellor Robinson was, I saw him out there dropping it with the band. I mean, it was a wonderful experience for all parties involved. And I can't tell you how many people I heard from Wake Forest University say that that was the best halftime show that they had ever been a part of. It just brought out the best in all parties, right? Wake Forest University band, Winston-Salem State band. It was absolutely incredible.
Yeah. And so if you think about us being in these spaces and being in this city, and you talk about a magnificent university, a freedom school like Winston-Salem State University, you talk about a great university like Wake Forest, we must figure this out. Gentlemen, we have to figure this out. How do we come together collectively to work in spaces where we elevate both institutions? I know you guys stand ready to do that. Any thoughts in terms of how we deepen those relationships and how we build upon, you know, that history, that tradition in some more significant ways?
Let me just say up front, I mean, right now, I mean, 10% of the student body at any given time are Winston-Salem State alums at Wake Divinity. Okay. So you can't talk about Wake Forest University School of Divinity without talking about Winston-Salem State University. I mean, our leaders on campus, whether I'm talking about Brother Alfred Clemens or my dear sister Jasmine Evans, who is the head of the Black student group on our campus right now and is a leader in our worship team at Wake Chapel. These are products of Winston-Salem State University, and they teach our larger student body something. Because at Wake Divinity, we have a lot of students that are first generation. We have a lot of students, I'm talking about Black and white students. We have a lot of students that are first generation. We have a lot of students, white brothers and sisters, that would say, I never would have imagined myself in a place like Wake Forest University, right? Brilliant students, great minds, but they saw what they interpreted at young ages as the walls of exclusion. And now they're there thriving. But in part, it's the model of Winston-Salem State University students. Because there's something about the WSSU students on our campus where they, Dr. Walker, to quote both Du Bois, W.E.B. Du Bois, graduate of Fisk, and Esther Roll, graduate of Spelman College. Y'all may know Esther Roll as the mother Florida from Good Times. Both of them said this about their HBCU experience. It was a place where I could walk in and take my humanity for granted, right? And it's being able to, where you're cultivated and fostered and you're intellectually challenged in a space where you're not second guessing your humanity or the dignity that God imbued within you, right? That when you arrive at a place like Wake Forest University and you are a minoritized student, whether it's because of class, whether it's because of race, whether it's because of where you went to undergraduate, right? When you've been fostered in that, there's a sense of anxiety and insecurity. And I tell you, the way the WSSU students model that for everybody else and inspire others, they make our campus possible in so many ways. So kudos to Winston-Salem State University.
Yeah. We thank you so much for that. And Corey, when you were at Winston-Salem State University, you were one that reached out and collaborated and had the kind of conversation that you talked about during this conversation as well. How did that come about for you? And where are the gaps or where are the holes that we can fill to create a stronger relationship?
Well, Chancellor, it really starts by following the students. Our student athletes, Winston-Salem State football players and Wake Forest football players train together. They do pro day together. Following the students in terms of their social interactions, the way in which they use 52 as a bridge where we think of it as a divide. The ways in which we were imagining, even as students in the class that Rogan and I taught, our students said, why isn't there a system where the buses from all campuses move across, you know, Wake Forest, Winston-Salem State, School of the Arts, Salem College, even Forsyth Tech? I mean, imagine we have a rich ecology of higher ed institutions for a city of roughly 250,000 folks. How do we deepen that experience? I thought it was classes. So we would, the introduction to African American Studies course at WSSU, students would invite students from Wake Forest to come over. We held the open class, and you've been in there sometimes. You know, I'll do some push-ups or anything. Anything can go in the class because it was that much energy with over 200 students.
Yeah, it's pretty scary, Dean, to watch them in class.
We run up and down the stairs. So how do we create spaces of hospitality? And I think that's what the campus has to do. For us at Wake, that's going to be the challenge. Winston invites the entire community. Homecoming is not only a homecoming for Winston-Salem State, it's a homecoming for all of Winston-Salem. And folks everywhere come there. Now, my two daughters, you know, Cameron and Celine, they loved it. This was the first campus Cameron said that she felt comfortable on, was at Winston-Salem State. And she grew up on a lot of campuses. So our task is, how do we create and sustain an open and welcoming atmosphere? Like in a space where Jonathan said, one's humanity is not questioned, it is a given. Much like the late Walter Rodney, you don't defend one's humanity, you assert. That's it. How do we create these institutional spaces like that? So we've had some successes and we need to build on those. But now how do we sustain transformation? That's the next step. And that's where we have commitment of both you, Chancellor Robinson, President Hatch, you have really the commitment of folks like Jonathan and myself, and you have the commitment of so many other folks across both campuses. So now how do we then institutionalize this so that 20 years from now, folks can come and look at this video and say, wow, this is where people were beginning, we're talking about this 20 years ago, and now it is normal. So we want this to be in the archives.
It will be.
We don't want it to be, we don't want 20 years to go and people asking the same question.
And I just want to really underscore that point. I really appreciate that point, Professor Walker, about what we can bring to the table and what we offer these students. And Chancellor Robinson, you're a part of this. The Winston-Salem State University campus is a part of this. Both Professor Walker and I have taught in the Ivy Leagues and have taught in, New England, and we can tell you something about imposter syndrome among students, right? And it's often not the students you suspect. It's not just the minoritized students. It's the students who come from wealth and privilege who often are living under that burden, that dehumanizing burden of imposter syndrome. And that is true also of students at Wake Forest University that we have the privilege of serving. And if there is anything that we know that our HBCU experiences have taught us, right, about humanity, about dignity, right? Why? For no other reason than you were made in the Imago Dei. You were made in the image of God, right? And it's what you intentionally cultivate in your students at Winston-Salem State University. And it's what we could do a better job of conditioning and fostering in our students at Wake Forest University. And I think it's these lessons, and that's why we're so fortunate to have people like Professor Walker in our midst, and fortunate to have a Winston-Salem State University in town because of the learning experience. It goes both ways.
Yeah. I mean, just incredible. I'm going to get you out of here. In terms of looking at the whole notion of this city and transformation. And Corey, you know, when I first got here in 2015, I talked a lot about transformation. But I then thought, I stepped back just a little bit in terms of looking at transformation. And I said, transformation is hard and transformation is difficult and transformation is messy. And I think sometimes when we look at transformation, we forget and look around the complexity, the messiness of it. And I think that's what we're seeing today. I'm gonna let you guys get us out of here with some thoughts on social justice in 2020. What does it look like and what will it look like going forward?
Well, the way I'm gonna think about this, Chancellor, is you're right, it is messy, it's hard work. As Fannie Lou Hamer said, freedom is an endless meeting. Sometimes, you know, folks, you get tired. But we're at an inflection moment. This pandemic moment, the uprisings that are occurring, the entire global culture gives us an opportunity to really take a chance down a road that we haven't traveled. And I'm going to end with some words from Arundhati Roy. She published this wonderful essay at the beginning of the pandemic in April on the pages of the Financial Times. The pandemic is a portal. And she ended with these words. We can choose to walk through it, dragging the carcasses of our prejudice and hatred, our avarice, our data banks and dead ideas, our rivers and smoky skies behind us. Or we can walk through lightly with little luggage, ready to imagine another world and ready to fight for. That's the vision that I'm carrying through this portal. I got little luggage, I mean, I got some books, but I'm coming back to Winston.
When are you coming back to Winston?
I should be back there.
What is a sabbatical? What does it look like? I mean, I've never had a sabbatical before. And
this is my first time, and I'm gonna show you what it looks like. It's me trying to get this out of here.
Whoa.
I gotta get this to the publisher. That's what this sabbatical is about. But most importantly, it's really a time to really take stock of life's journey and then come back, grab hands with Jonathan, with you, Chancellor Robinson, with the entire Winston-Salem community, and walk through that portal with light luggage, imagining a new world and willing to fight for it.
Thank you so much. Jonathan, take us home, get us out of here in terms of social justice 2020, now into the future. What does it look like?
I can tell you what it has to look like. We have to view one another through the lenses of love. Mm. James Baldwin said that love takes off the mask that we feel we can't live within. No, we can't live without. And again, it's not love in some sort of interpersonal, mushy sense, but it's a state of being. It's a state of grace. It's about being able to look at another and saying, I see the God in you. And therefore, that person being able to look back and seeing the God in me. And it's that sense of love that's tough, that's difficult, yet challenges us to grow and mature. And so social justice is a matter of growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, if this fragile experiment of democracy we call America is ever going to fully realize its potential, then it demands the kind of maturity that only love can bring about.
Thank you. Thanks, both of you. I mean, what an amazing conversation. When I thought about this, this was exactly what I expected and what I anticipated. Just a great, great conversation among us, and it will be archived. So I thank you for staying a little bit longer with me. We usually don't go this long. What I'll do is we'll take this and we'll do part one and part two. And we'll create two podcasts out of this. And I think it would be something that you guys will enjoy listening to for years to come. So thank you for joining me and being my guest on Future Focus. You have had certainly added value, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Hey, we love you, my brother. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And goodbye, everyone. And join us again next week for another edition of Future Focus Now.